Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Yes, we're into episode 11. And I'll be honest with you, folks, I got caught in one of those YouTube kind of rabbit holes and thinking, oh, I've got half an hour to go. I can prepare. There's no worries. And then suddenly it's 90 seconds to go. I'm late. So here we are. We're on. And I haven't got all my slides all up and ready. But hey, that doesn't matter. The show will go on. So how are you doing, Bo? Thank you for joining us.
Very well, thank you. Very warm and good evening to everyone. It's always lovely to be on the show. Stephen, nice to see you on here as well, mate. And looking forward to it. It's been an interesting week for myself and Manukau Rovers. We were on the end of another hiding from Dwayne's team. And I'm actually a little bit glad that Dwayne's not here because I would have had to dig a bit of a hole and hide it.
So Dwayne, unfortunately, probably will not be with us this week because he has got some charity work that he's doing. So all the best with that, Dwayne. Hope you raise lots and lots of cash. Much of that. I don't know what charity it is, but I'm sure it's a very worthy one. Stephen, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, unfortunately, boy, looks like they might have dished you out a bit of charity on the weekend. Looking at that scoreline, mate, sorry about that, brother. But hey, listen, Paul, privilege and a pleasure to once again be on the show. But obviously, we'll discuss a little bit more of Auckland Club Rugby a little bit later. I'll give Bora a chance to basically get some air into the nostrils and breathe again.
Well, I have to say, Dwayne, man of the match performance. He was playing at number 12, real team man. And
sorry,
12 to 15. Yeah, he was playing insides. Yeah, he was playing second five. He came out second half, absolutely blitzed us. And I have to say, my team, well, they were in it at halftime, but about 12, 15 minutes after the second half resumption, the floodgates opened, and this just goes to show you can't even drop your head for a couple of minutes against a quality side like Pakuranga, coached by a very, very experienced coach, John Clough. And that was another cricket score, unfortunately, 59 for 3 after 80 minutes of cricket at Pakuranga, Bell Park.
So, Dwayne, who is the number 9 for Samoa, turning out at 12, so doing a bit of a TJ Perenara there then, who is moving out from 9. Obviously, TJ playing at 10 for the Hurricanes quite a few times this season. Didn't do so at the weekend though, which is a bit of an interesting one. I just sort of realised that, but anyway, or I don't remember him doing so. But there you go. So. Simon in the live chat has said, has anyone read about Australia's Super 8's idea for Super Rugby? No, I haven't, but I will try and read up on that as during the show and we can put that out there. But a topic we have been wanting to talk about for a while, but before I actually get onto that, sorry. Look, the Driving Wall Show comes to 8 p.m. 8 p.m. God, I'm all over the place tonight. 8 p.m. every single Monday. So do join us if you're listening to the recording. You can join us at 8 p.m. And in the live chat. Our preferred place for you, in all honesty, is on our Facebook page, New Zealand Sports Radio. But we do have a very active discussion also on our YouTube channel as well, which has just been rebranded as New Zealand Sports Radio. But a topic that I know that Boaz has been wanting to talk to us about is his idea of how to restructure New Zealand domestic rugby. Now, I'm sort of dropping this on you, sir, at a bit of a last moment. But do you want to, I know it's an idea that you've had going around in your mind for a while now. So do you want to give us a quick description as to how you think we could possibly restructure the whole Super Rugby and club scene and what, and actually start off first off, what's your driver? Is it to get more people playing? Is it to get a greater people watching? Which angle are you coming at it from? And then describe what actually the change is.
Well, look, the key driver is more community engagement. That in itself is the nucleus because, you know, post-COVID-19, this is the best time to press the reset button, get more community engagement, get more players and coaches and volunteers, administrators involved in the grassroots game and create a pathway to that next level. So my proposal is to scrap Super Rugby altogether, create what you would call a hybrid NPC or Mitre 10 competition, run it concurrently with all the club competitions right around the country, and create a pathway for club players to get regular game time, depending on their form, with their relevant provinces. And of course, you know, we're seeing a lot of players who've come back, returning players, because there's not much professional rugby happening outside of New Zealand, playing grassroots, you know, community club rugby. So I think that's probably the way to go. And what we're trying to do is professionalize the amateur game and look at getting more community engagement, getting more people through the turnstiles, and basically commingling the two competitions and giving more opportunity for club players, coaches, and administrators to be involved in the high level, be involved at a high level on a more regular basis. That's the driver.
So basically, you're winding back the clock and having club rugby and then the NPC or Mitre 10 Cup as being the top level instead then, effectively?
Absolutely. And I think it's probably a good model for even Australia to look at, rather than, try and stay abreast with a competition which has clearly outgrown them, especially at Super Rugby level. And also what this will do is if we go wind back the clock, we're going to have more rep level players, more professional, and also hopefully see some All Blacks playing club rugby and be more accessible to the community sport. And hopefully that will bring more people back into watching local club rugby and basically bringing more revenue to much needed clubs right around the country.
Yeah, look. I'll be honest. I think that's a couple of reasons why this won't happen. One is financial, and the other one is high performance. If we take the high performance side first, Ben Darwin tweeted relatively recently that the more teams you have in that level below international, the lower your performance is compared to sort of number of, so for example, England or and France, for example, have got a large number of players, some of the highest numbers of players, player pool, and therefore you'd think England with a big player pool should be one of the top countries all the time. But Ben Darwin says if you have, well, they've got 12 teams in their premiership, and he says the more teams you have shows that actually the bigger player pool doesn't perform so well. So a bit like if you look at where the top teams, you think about it, have been South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, for effectively the past, during all of professionalism, apart from when England won at World Cup once. And they've only ever had well, basically four or five teams at the top of their of their pyramid. And yeah, just from that connectivity point of view, the amount of time players have getting used to each other for the national team, if you spread them out too far, you end up actually underperforming at international level. So I think from a high performance point of view, and we all know that in New Zealand, the All Blacks basically pay for everything. And hence, New Zealand rugby would never countenance anything that impacts the All Blacks' performances. And actually, I'll get onto that in a second. Second point is finances. There's only so much you can only fund so many professional teams, and club rugby has just got too many teams to be able to fund every single team professionally. And Stephen and I, we've been getting around Auckland Club Rugby, and we're struggling to cover all those games and give them exposure. And that's without even taking in Northland or North Harbour. And that only covers the Blues area. If you take that to the whole country, Club Rugby across all the Minor 10 Cups, what we've got to Minor 10 Cup, 14 provinces, between 10 and 16 top level. So you're looking, about 140 to what, about 180, 200 club sides playing at the top level across the country. Well, that's just way too many from a financial point of view to be able to support, I think, for full-time professional players.
Yeah, Paul, and I think that's where the North versus South game comes in, because if you look at the if you look at Australian rugby league, the NRL has created a very successful model in having their elite NRL competition and then the state of origin. So I think that's where the North-South game really plays a pivotal role, and maybe it gets drawn out to a 3-game or possibly 5 games, and that is your nucleus or your core selection pool for the All Blacks.
Yeah, I guess the thing about the NRL or league is essentially it's not an international game, is it? Every 3 or 4 years they put in a World Cup. But apart from that, it's not really the money there, the funding there is at the NRL level. It's not at the international level, as you say, and also the state of origin. Good point about this North-South game. Now, a lot of people are kind of like, oh, yes, it's a throwback. It's something that we want to see. The only reason we have a North-South game is because Ian Foster wanted a high-level game to prepare the All Blacks for the international season. And it's been put in a way that means that the choice basically was, do you want Super Rugby finals, Ian, or do you want a North-South game to prepare your players? And he said, I want a North-South game. And hence, there isn't now time in the gap between Super Rugby, Aotearoa, and Mitre 10 Cup to fit in finals. Hence, that's why we don't have finals, which everyone is now crying out for. Because they said, look, we don't want to squash the provincial or the Mitre 10 Cup season. And again, you can prop up 5 Super Rugby franchises with cash. Propping up 14 provinces is a lot more expensive. So you want to give those provinces as much of an opportunity to gain the normal income they would do. And they're all down on income. They're all had to, apart from about 2, I think, have had to make redundancies. But that was basically, we can't fund 14 provinces, so we have to give them Mitre 10 Cup in its entirety. Super Rugby, we can prop up. We only have a very small window. What do? We either do a kind of, I mean, North-South is essentially becoming a probables versus probables one. And Aaron says in the live chat, it's not a true North-South teams anyway. Stephen, do you want to, we've kind of not included you so far. Any things you'd like to chip in with?
No, listen, I've been just sitting back listening to the kōrero or the chat, so to speak. First thing I've got to say, boy, I absolutely love your backdrop. Straight up rugby, man, it's given me an idea. I know Paul and I have been talking about having our own sort of backdrop in terms of driving more of the show, but I've got to say yours is absolutely
Thank you.
Superb, brother. With regards to your idea, with regards to your ideas you mentioned at the start, I want to put a bit of a positive spin, something I don't think we do well in community rugby. What I've actually learned by covering Auckland Club Rugby, a lot of other clubs are on the social network, and I don't think they're as proactive as they could be on the social network, because if you want to engage, you've got to engage somewhere, and the easiest thing you can do is through your social network. And I think it's sometimes a missed opportunity from a lot of clubs. We've seen, I know my own Union Northland being so proactive with their social network in 2020, and they're starting to get a lot of traction and a lot of engagement. And I think it's sort of proven in the last few weeks since we've been covering Auckland Club Rugby, with that extra engagement, you get interest. It's as simple as that. And when people know what's happening and what you've got on your own doorstep, I think there are possibilities with regards to the community game, Boar.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because now I've got to make a point based on what Paul mentioned before. I mean, it's not feasible to fund and finance, X number of clubs or X number of provinces. And that's absolutely correct. So what you will see going forward over the next 3 to 4 years in pretty much every province, you will see a lot of clubs merge some of these clubs because they are financially not sustainable, they're not viable. And it'll be the same with your provinces. You will see some provinces merge and amalgamate. So it's a case of figuring out what the most financially practical and most feasible provinces and clubs are, and then you wrap this model around it. And once you get the community engagement, I think it's something which really needs to be tested out. And I have to say, guys, you know, I'm a huge fan of seeing provincial rugby played at your smaller stadiums, at your smaller venues, because you get more people coming through the turnstiles and they can actually relate to what's going on. And because this hasn't been tried and tested, and given that we're seeing a lot more players returning, for example, you know, a number of Japanese players now have got clearance, are playing in the counties Manukau as well as Auckland, Northland and North Harbour, and also in some of the other provincial club championships. You are starting to see more communities, more crowd come for these community games. So I think it's something which is absolutely worth pursuing. And I think the respective unions, as you rightly pointed out, especially with the social networking, needs to put a bit of focus on that, showcase these players and see if they can really increase engagement, and especially seeing parents of younger children bring them to these clubs. And we might all of a sudden see a spike in player numbers coming through these clubs.
Now, folks, both touched on a couple of things there. One of which is amalgamations, and another one of which is, as you say, promoting of the club games. All I can say at this point is keep an eye out on New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page for potential news about that over the next 2 weeks, because something may or may not be happening merging, but definitely collaboration. Might be, it's definitely, I think, the way forward. One thing I do want to show up is the attendance figures that we've had across Super Rugby Aotearoa for the 9 rounds so far. Now, my initial thoughts were that what had happened was we had a spike of good crowds at the beginning due to basically people being locked up for 3 months and having no rugby. And then being someone who is in Hamilton, I saw the Chiefs numbers drop off over their 3 home games and thought that basically, look, this is something that's going to drop away because I don't see the club, the Super Rugby sides, apart from the fact that they're playing derbies only, doing anything different than they were doing pre COVID, where we saw a drop off in attendance. However, looking at the numbers over the past couple of weeks, you can see that the Hurricanes actually had their best crowd at the weekend against the Chiefs. So against a team that was bottom of the table, so not even potentially a good game, as it were. The Crusaders kept up, had their second biggest turnout last week. We saw the Highlanders, again, have their biggest one 2 weeks ago, and the Chiefs back up. Okay, not up to the 23K they had in their opening game, but look, they've lost every single game. We know losing teams tend to get smaller crowds. So I had to reassess my view and say that actually the competition has managed to maintain its crowd numbers, which are an interest, which I think has been very good. Admittedly, it's only a short season, whether this will be continued across multiple years, who knows? But I think that actually that it has worked this year. Now, how much of that is down to we've been locked up for 3 months and then get, or 2 months, however long it was, and then get to get out? And how much of it is that people actually like the new format and the new format is what they want? I'm not sure, but I don't think it's good that that it has maintained its numbers. Stephen, Boa, any thoughts on the Super Rugby sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Super Rugby attendance. Do you think this is a sustainable thing, or do you think it's just purely a this season? And the Super Rugby franchise needs to do more work around community engagement to keep those numbers up.
Paul?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, really. I mean, if you have a really intense competition, I mean, you can't sustain the intensity for too long because it's eventually going to take a physical toll. Yeah. And also, customer perception, customer engagement. You have to innovate. So because this is a bit of innovation, and by that I mean the quality of rugby has been next level, and I think we've finally figured out how to actually make Super Rugby super. It's to get rid of the not-so-super rugby teams, and we have a neon-perfect product. So I think this is sustainable, but year on year, I think New Zealand rugby and all the individual franchises, they're going to have to look at innovation. They're going to really have to look at community engagement. I saw the Blues with their community program where they have the recycling of boots for children, things like that, where they actually go out to the community, get involved, and if they keep continually getting the communal support, yeah, sure, this is absolutely sustainable. But at the same time, the game, because it's starting to really speed up, we're seeing a lot of action, we might need to bring some innovations from a regulation point of view as well, where we try and see, how can we make the game more exciting? How can we make it more spectator-friendly? How can we simplify it more? And we need to get new customers into the sport. We need to get new people who haven't been involved in the game, bringing their kids, bringing their families, bringing those communities into the game and getting new eyeballs on the screens and through the turnstiles. If the franchises can do that, yeah, I think it's all on like Donkey Kong.
I think you mentioned, one thing also Nocturnal Rights comes in with is you mentioned there that, the intensity and that this cannot... Yeah, you can't keep it going for much more than 10 weeks before you end up killing all the players. A Nocturnal Rights point in there, Stephen, around the All Blacks interference and pulling players from competition, making it clear that it's not actually the most important thing.
He may have a point there, but I'd like to take the Boa Athu route that social network has played a really big part as well. I've been watching all... five franchises with their Facebook site, the stuff that they've been doing away from the paddock. There's a lot of promotion going on behind the scene, and I'm really impressed. Boa mentioned the thing that the Blues players are doing with the all the boots that have been handed in. So there's a lot of promotions going on in the background by all five franchises, and they've actually been there to be complimented on that work that they've done thus far. And of course, if you get a product that's rolling, and I think the good thing I think people are enjoying, I think it's just the fact the Blues have been sort of down so long, they've had a really, really solid season, and then all of a sudden I think you've been getting these really big crowds along to Eden Park, and I think the rest of the country has looked at it. Wow, they've finally produced a decent side. They're worth going to have a look at it. And if you look at the crowds that have basically turned up to watch the Blues and away games, we've seen some pretty good crowds rock up. I know they had a full house down in Dunedin and in Christchurch, maybe not those same full crowds for the other two away games against the Chiefs and the Hurricanes. But I think when you've got a team that's playing a good brand or attractive brand of rugby, and not to mention, you know, the home fans want to go along and see them get knocked over as well. So you throw all those factors in the mix, and that's what you've got. And of course, Paul, it got off to the perfect start. You mentioned before COVID has played its part. People were just hanging out to see sport, and I think they've all been pleasantly surprised. It's one of those things. It's like turning up to a restaurant for the first time. If you enjoy that experience the first time, you're going to rock back to that restaurant again for a second occasion.
Yep, very true. Going to go back to one of Nocturnal Rights' comments that he put in a while back. New Zealand rugby has tied itself too much to a business model that lets Sky run the game for them, with All Black tests given absolute precedence over the important domestic structure that makes the ABACs or ABs any good. Now, I think that New Zealand rugby has found Sky to be very useful as an entity to blame for various things. Now, one of those is the cost of watching the game. Well, you know what? The reason Sky has to charge so much is because of how much money they have to give New Zealand rugby, right? The reason New Zealand rugby are doing this is because the All Blacks bring in all the money. So it's a bit of a circular thing there. And the reason that the All Blacks bring in all the money means that you have to play them at the times that will get the biggest audiences. So, I don't think we should exonerate the New Zealand rugby this and point all the blame at Sky. I think it's a joint thing between the two of them. It needs to be a bit symbiotic from that point of view. Yes, the All Blacks have definitely been the pinnacle. And I mean, that's what New Zealand rugby were quite honest about this, weren't they? Back after one of the Rugby World Cups, was it? I can't remember which one it was now. But they just said, we have to structure ourselves to make the All Blacks win Rugby World Cups, essentially. And that's what has happened and what has continued. So, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's all good and well. But if the All Blacks don't win the World Cup, that's when all these questions start popping up, which was the case in 2019 RWC. Because, you know, NZR put all their eggs in one basket with the whole, leveraging of all the All Blacks. And, you know, there's always a silver lining, and maybe they're just having a harder look at their business model. And we might see more All Blacks being accessible to the community sport, to NPC. And who knows, they might turn back the clock. And as I suggested before, getting more communal engagement, because one of the issues for the longevity of the game is that we are seeing a decrease in participation of children. Now, there are various reasons, because other sports codes seem to be eating into it. And of course, the whole thing about contact, more Polynesian children being involved in the sport, and this what we call soccer mummy syndrome, where kids getting hurt. So there's a whole raft of reasons, and I think there's a much bigger picture here. So I think one of the key ingredients to address this is to look at winding the clock back and getting elite athletes involved more at the community level, so that you have a wider engagement. And I think that will far outweigh any decrease or sacrifice in high performance, in any revenues, because right across the board, there will be more opportunities which will present itself, which I think NZR have to work with the other unions. And the more micro units working on that same business model, it's only going to make the revenue great, i.e. merchandise and things like that, because it's a lot easier to get revenue if you have a product which is easily accessible and which is easily sold through the grassroots, i.e. merchandise, as opposed to trying to hedge your bets on exclusively the high performance angle. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that the New Zealand Rugby definitely needs to make the tiers beneath the All Blacks, i.e. Super Rugby and the Provincial Rugby and Club Rugby, all more self-funding, because at the moment, if you have all your eggs in one basket, all you need to do is to drop that basket and you're in trouble. But currently, thankfully, that's not been the case. Sorry, Stephen.
Yeah, Paul, I was just going to reply to Nocturnal Rights. He says, funnily enough, he enjoys watching Otago and the Highlanders more. I really like that comment, because it actually says to me he's not just an All Black fan, but he's a rugby fan. I think what we created over the last several years is All Black fans, just All Black fans simply. Now, I've always had this saying with top-level rugby, whether it's the All Blacks or Super Rugby, I never really concern myself about that level of rugby. What I do concern myself about is club rugby, and then because that rolls into Mitre 10 rugby, because those are the guys who eventually go on to play at those levels. Now, I liken the New Zealand Rugby Union to a guardian. If you've got 10 children, you don't make sure you look after half of them and not worry about the other half. You make sure all 10 of them are catered for, no matter what their demands or what their levels are. And I think pretty much that's what the mistake that the rugby union has made. And I hope if they learn anything out of Super Rugby Aotearoa, it is about your supporters and your stakeholders. But don't forget about the guys down at grass level. See, that's where we come in handy, Paul, here at New Zealand Sport Radio. We tautoko even the ones down at grassroots level as well, because there are some very good players running around in club level. You know what? They often talk about that step up from club level to Mitre 10 level. I'll tell you what, I don't know if it's, and I don't know whether Boa agrees with me, I don't know if it's big as everybody actually says it is, because if you put some work into a player who's showing potential at club level, it doesn't take much to, if he's got skill, it doesn't take him much to go to that extra level, to see how far he can go. What do you reckon, Boa?
You know what? I'll tell you something really interesting, guys. So last Wednesday, the Mitre 10 contenders squad, so the three coaches, Alama, Philo, and Ice, Craig McGrath, they had a training session for all the wider squad. So this consisted of all the Auckland club players. Unfortunately, my team didn't have a single representative, because we just don't have that caliber of players. And was at Williams Park number 2. So I went along, and there's a good, decent, because I put out a message to the lads saying, look, the contenders are training. Why don't you just come out and check it out? And there's a good crowd on hand. And you're right, Stephen, you know, because at the moment, we're seeing some really good quality players playing club footy, especially in Auckland. And what I saw, there wasn't a great degree of difference. There was a bit more probably venom in the hits, and you know, there's a bit of feeling out there, more so to push an individual case for selection. But you're right, there isn't a great degree of difference, especially with the the top clubs. So for example, if you look at Auckland now, I've been going on for the last couple of weeks that Varsity are the team to beat, and true enough, they go and dealt to a very strong College Rifles team, and they are showcasing some great players, and that form will continue on to NPC or Mitre 10. And I think with the other provinces, and I can see Simon on the forum says enjoying watching Bay of Plenty, it's the same scenario. I mean, you go down to counties Manuka, we have some top quality players who come back from Japan. For example, Baden Kerr, who was playing the Honda Heat, he's pretty much running the show at Karaka. Now, we had a preseason game against Karaka, and it was a very close call. But right now, it's going to be anything but close, because you have these high quality rep professional players playing grassroots club rugby.
Now, this is the comment that I want to jump on by Nocturnal Rights here. He goes, to add my local sport comment, involves a legacy of passion following Otago with my father. Absolutely. To me, that's what the provinces and also Super Rugby need to do, is to get going to the game as an, or switching the TV on and watching the game as being family time. And then if you get it as family time, then it becomes the culture. It becomes ingrained in the culture of the family. And you do it with your, when you grow up, you do it with your kids. Now, is that a way of filling the stands tomorrow? No, it's not. It's a way of slowly increasing the attendance over the next 20 years, and mean that in 10 or 15 or whatever, or however many years, meaning in 15 to 20 years time, it's packed every single game, whether you're winning or losing, whether it's an important game or non-important game. And it's about building that culture. And that's where I think they need to, they need to go. Batman, I'm making some comments about who could win the Mitre 10 Cup this year. We're a number of weeks away from that. We will be doing a preview show about the Mitre 10 Cup. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole this evening. Now, we do need to get on to club rugby and to get on to some results, because we've been had a great chat about the structure of rugby so far, but club rugby next. Stephen, do you want to take us away?
Yeah, well, it's sort of starting to get to the pointy end of many of the club competitions, especially up in Northland, Paul, because on the weekend we had round 8 just completed, so that means there's just one more round to go. Remembering the top two will go through to the final, and now the final this year is not going to be played at Toll Stadium. It's actually going to be played at the home of the highest qualifying team. So if I quickly go through the results from the weekend: Kerikeri 35 over Ngati Hene Moerewa UK 5. Now, they were the promoted team at the beginning of the year, and they were getting some almighty hidings at the top of the year, but as you've seen, they've just slowly improved as the season have grinded along. And the good thing about it, there's no relegation this year, so there's an opportunity for them to go away over the summertime and basically reload and come back again next year. Next result: Old Boys Marist at home, too strong for Horahora. Then that's Horahora, who started out of the blocks like a pretty much a bat out of you-know-what, winning their first 5 in a row, but they've lost 3 on the bounce, and they are in jeopardy of missing out on the final the following weekend, which I'm heading up to. Now, Waipu 19, Kamo 12, and that pretty much qualifies Waipu for the final, but it doesn't qualify them for the actual home. They have to win again next weekend against Horahora, 19-12. Western Sharks with their best performance of the season, 49 points to 20 over Wellsford. And Mid-Northern, the other team that's gunning for a place in the final, 42-10. And as we look at the table, it's Waipu up top. Waipu have Horahora this weekend. They go away to play Horahora, but the way that Horahora is going at the minute, Waipu might be too strong. There's a few Northland players running around for Horahora, the likes of Dan Hawkins, who's unfortunately been injured the last few weeks, Jacob Machu, who's been in the Northland squad, Carter Pryor, guys like that, of that ilk, Justin Davies in the front row, all with ITM Cup experience. He actually played in the ITM Cup days, but they've kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit. Mid-Northern go to Ngati Hine Moerewa UK, but I think they'll be too strong, and I'm Waipu to beat Horahora. So those are the two teams I'm picking to meet in the final up in Waipu. I'm preempting it. I'll probably just curse both those two teams. That's happening on the 22nd of August, that final, and I'm picking it's going to be in Waipu, Paul. So should be interesting. We'll come south a little bit to North Harbour, starting to get interesting in North Harbour with one round to go. North Shore 29, East Coast Bay 6, Silverdale 38, North Harbour Marist 12. Now, in the upset of the weekend, Northcote 18, Takapuna 5. Up until now, Takapuna were unbeaten, and Kumu, a team on the rise, 69 points to nil. Now, a good thing about the North Harbour competition is we look at the final round for round 9. There's a couple of big games or interesting games coming up this weekend, and that Silverdale-Kumu game is going to be a very big game as we look at the table. Remembering the top 4 teams will host basically quarterfinals, so it's important that you finish either 1, 2, 3, or 4. Takapuna, Northcote have pretty much qualified, and really your other two teams are going to come from a next crop of 4 teams: North Shore, Silverdale, Kumu, and I think East Coast Bays actually might be just out of it. They'd need a whole lot of things go their way. Quite frankly, it'd be like winning the $43 million lotto this weekend for them to come through, guys. And of course, we move on to counties, Manukau, and it was their final round on the weekend. Ardmore Marist looking the team to beat. 43-10 over Patamahoe. Oni Fero, far too good for Papakura. 78-12, condemning the boys from Papakura to a winless season. Karaka, 17. Manurewa, 10. Now, that was also had an interesting implications, that particular result, because we're talking a top four. And Bombay went down to Pukekohe, 51-30, but they have qualified for the semi-finals, finishing in fourth placing on the table. So Counties Manukau or Tribe haven't updated the app as yet, but I'm picking it's going to be Ardmore Marista versus Bombay in one semi-final and Karaka versus Manurewa in the other final. So the two hosts will be Ardmore and Karaka in those Counties Manukau finals, and that's for the McNamara Cup.
Just looking at the table, it looks like that Bombay is a finish above Manurewa in third. So I assume Ardmore will play Manurewa and Karaka will play Bombay. Looking at the county's website.
Wow, that's weird. That actually differs to Tribe. But anyway, not to worry there.
Just quickly before you move on to the Auckland scene, a quick update from the Waikato club scene. And the last round of games, funnily enough, included the same two games that will be played as part of the semi-finals. So down in Cambridge, it was Hautapu versus Melville. The first half was tight. It was 15-3 at halftime, but Hautapu came out and showed why they are the most fancied team and top team in the table by winning this one 37-18, really dominating that second half. The other game was Fraser Tech versus Otorohanga down in Otorohanga. And whilst Fraser Tech ran out to got two early tries to lead by 14 points, Otorohanga came back to win that one 36-31. Other results there saw Hamilton Old Boys beat University 36-0. Marist beat Tiamutu 47-13, and Morrisville were on the bye. So the semi-finals will be replays of those games this weekend. So Hautapu looking at beating Melville yet again, and Otorohanga hosting Fraser Tech. And have I mispronounced something in there? Probably I have, Aaron. Mixing up between two names I can't actually say, so we'll stay clear of that and just move on to the Auckland results.
Hey, thanks for that, Paul. Just to let you know, once we get enough money in the budget, and Paul has got a paywall site on the driving wall, you're watching New Zealand Sport Radio, but when the money starts coming flowing in, we will be sending Paul off to Te Wānanga or Aotearoa, Wānanga in 2021, so he can touch it up on his te reo Māori. And if we have maybe even some Pacific Island speakers out there, that would be much appreciated as well, just to help him out. But we're here to tautoko and support Paul, and he is the boss of the show, and that's that he presses all the buttons at the right time. But I digress. We'll head into that Auckland results. Remembering the Auckland, I think we've got about five rounds to go, boy. Is that
how many? Five more rounds, yeah. And there's some very interesting games coming up. And, we're starting to see a clear separation between those top eight sides and the bottom sides. So, some interesting times ahead. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'll quickly go through these results and I'll find a way so you can all chat about the games that you were at. Grammar Tech 47, Te Papapa 12. Just on Te Papapa, they had trouble, obviously, one game with a team, but you've got to give them a little bit of credit. You know, they're not getting beaten up too badly, so they're hanging in there, boy.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think it's fantastic because that just means, you know, teams, A team, which has been taking a bit of a hiding, especially in the first few rounds, they're starting to, you know, dig their heels in and try and make a contest out of it. And I think that's what we need to see to have a healthy competition where we don't have lopsided games where, you know, every team has an equal opportunity. And I think Te Papa have had a few returning players who played a bit of rugby overseas. And it's probably starting to show on the scoreboard as well.
Yeah, I have very sad memories of playing out into Papa, but getting sent to the sin bin in a senior reserve match out there. No, very, very sad, because the whole family turned up to watch and just in time to see me getting sent to the sin bin. But I digress, guys. Now, a big result there for Waitemata over Otahuhu, and to be honest, I feel a lot for Otahuhu. I really do. When I first moved to Auckland many, many moons ago, I stayed out in the Otahuhu area, and they were my first side that I supported. I was at Eden Park in 1985 when they beat Grammar in front of 25,000 people at Eden Park. Yeah, unbelievable. Yes, that used to happen. They used to get those sort of crowds to Premier Club finals. They beat Grammar on that particular day, and just to see where they are at the moment, it's definitely been a season of learnings for Otahuhu. But you know, I think once again, by using the social network and having a bit of support for these guys, it won't take much. They do need a little bit of help, and sometimes it's good to know what these clubs actually need, Boa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it's been a very tough season for them. And now a very good friend, very close friend of mine, Tavita Tulanga, who's a former Suburbs man, he's the head coach. And they're actually not going to put aside post-COVID with the revamp season. So they actually don't have a premier development or any other senior sides. And this year, with all the delegates agreeing that there are no prerequisites to be eligible to play Galahushi. Previous years, you would have to have a minimum of four senior teams. So they've only got the premier team this year. And wow, they're just taking some absolute hammering. So looks like Waitemata are really, putting the foot down as well. They've been working towards this. And I think the team from out West Auckland, they're trying to make a very strong case and make that final eight. And probably have a crack at the semi-finals. So,
And boy, just a bit of comment about the head coach, Soatama Semautulagasi Tavita. He's coached over in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, well, that's where I actually met him. I've played with him. He's coached me. I've coached with him. And then, when I moved over here, which is almost 21 years ago, when I first got introduced to rugby, my original club was actually Roskill Districts, which is no longer around. And from there, I moved to Grammar Carlton, which is now Grammar Tech, where your teachers Eastern and Grammar merge. I was involved with the 85 and under restricted team. He's a very, very committed, very dedicated man. And I feel for him, and it's not going to get easier because we have to actually play them in about in 3 weeks' time, and that is a game we are targeting, and a bit of personal pride on the line as well. So we're planning to make sure that we put the foot on the throat and not let them stand up either. So yeah, it is what it is, Stephen, and I hope those glory days come back to Otahuhu, because it's very, very important that especially South Auckland clubs, they have a good, strong season, because that will help attract more players, especially the younger players. And this is a challenge I'm having at Manukau Rovers, because most of our players have actually left. And when we play some of the top sides, I have to say, sometimes it feels like home and home, because most of our players have transitioned on to their clubs. But you can't really blame the players either, because they want what's best for their careers, and they've identified that being with a winning side, being with a strong side which has financial as well as communal backing, is the way forward.
And Boa, aside, obviously, who's kind of sneaked under the radar and sitting second on the table at this point in time. Paul and I were talking about it as Paul was making his way back to Hamilton on the weekend. But obviously, Pakuranga rocked up too strong for you guys, 59-3. Just a little bit of just your thoughts on what happened on Saturday afternoon.
Look, it was a tight contest right up to halftime. And for Stray, for whatever reason, our boys, they just dropped their heads. And there was a 15-minute period where they just rocked up with six tries back-to-back-to-back, absolutely killed the competition, killed the contest. And, yeah, unfortunately, another a bit of a cricket score, 3 for 59 after 80 minutes at Pearl Park. But, look, it is what it is. You know, we have to move on from this week. Again, it doesn't get any easier. However, we're back at home in the swamp. We're playing Eden. So, you know, we're looking forward to tomorrow night. We've got to prepare well. We've got to prepare in a slightly different manner. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if it's a much closer competition. And given that we are overwhelming underdogs, got nothing to lose, so all to play. And we're hoping for that upset.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Pickering is sitting in second place at the moment, but they've got a tough road to hoe because coming up this weekend, they head to university to play a very good university side that is on fire at the moment. 31-19 over College Rifles, and maybe they're the team to watch. I know everybody's probably gunning for last year's premiers in Ponsonby, but maybe the team to watch at this stage. Suburbs 57, East Tamaki 10 are too strong. And probably in a game that was the game of the weekend, and Paul, you happened to be there, Eden 24, Papatoetoe 14.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was 17-14 going up until until the Hooter. Well, there would have been Hooter at a Super Rugby game. It took a penalty try on the 80th minute to make that gap and make it a 10-point win. Now, this was a one-score game for a lot of it. Eden went out to a good lead, 12-0. But Papatoetoe came back and were leading 12-14 coming in after about the hour markish. Eden have got a very powerful scrum, and that really proved to be the difference. Papatoetoe had a tough time at scrum time. Eden out scrummaged them, and that's where they got the penalty try from at the end there. And as I say, if you don't have a scrum, it's very difficult to win the game. And that proved this time. Have a quick check of my post-match interviews over on the New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page, where I talked to the head coach of Eden. Because last time we talked, he was talking about the sevens nature of his side. But that's not what we saw this weekend.
Yeah, Paul, and good to see the at least two of the Costa brothers starting. Rodrigo Costa starting at fullback, and of course Iggy Costa just showing how good he is. Or as a utility, he normally plays halfback. He slipped into the 10 jersey, and another one of the Costa brothers off the bench as well. Nicholas Costa popped down as well. Did you get to see a bit of them, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. Nicholas Costa came out and came back on at 9. For them, the starting scrum half moved off over onto the wing there. But obviously those the three brothers back. Nico coming looks like he's got some knee issues that he's trying to get through first. But they're class players. Obviously they all popped down to Southland, played a bit of Mitre 10 Cup down there, didn't they? And have come back as very good players.
And my second week in a row over at Western Springs, I'm starting to get to know every blade of grass on the western side of Western Springs, guys. But it was the home side, Ponsonby, 36-10 over Marist in a repeat of last year's final. Listen, it was reasonably close up till halftime. And Marist, to be fair, were getting in behind Ponsonby. They were getting nice little offloads. They used their pack well. Their line-out was operating really well, and they were just doing some good things. But the thing with Ponsonby, you make mistakes against these guys. They really only had two opportunities, and they nailed both of those opportunities. And a youngster that impressed me no end was Joel Cobb out of Mount Albert Grammar. For many of you who saw the Ignite Sevens, or the Red Bull Ignite Sevens last year, he was one of the stars of the tournament, extremely quick. And once again, if you check out our website, you'll see a try that he scores. He's not the tallest man in the world, but he leapt above everybody and pulled down probably the best of his tries. His other two were just basically pretty much run-ins. Also, we speak about the level of rugby. You know, somebody like Jordan Traynor, who's played for the Blues before, played for the Chiefs. And you know, you've got players out of there that are basically standing up against a player of that quality. But I don't know what more you can actually say about Ponsonby. They are such a good side. And the scary thing about it, all their players were wearing their respective secondary school socks on the weekend as well. And I noted there were a lot of Mount Albert Grammar kids running around. Mark Watson, if he's watching the show, he'll be super excited about all these Mount Albert Grammar kids running around in the Ponsonby side. But a couple of youngsters that really, really impressed me. Now, the 2020 Blues Player of the Year, Suani Vikina, who was running around at hooker. This kid is an absolute beast. He's a very, very big hooker and just a dynamic ball carrier as well. And, of course, the younger brother of Patrick Tuipulotu, Hamden Tuipulotu, playing at loosehead prop. If you think Ofa Tuanga Fasi is big, wow. I tell you, this kid, I don't know what the food bill would be like at the Tuipulotu household, but he's a very, very big kid. So he impressed me no end. But they've got a whole lot of youngsters in the side, and very well captained by Alex Daybeck as well. Once again, look out for my interview with Alex. Very well spoken. He also played Māori 10 Cup for Auckland this year. And then you can sort of throw in the likes of Joel Cobb and Jordan Traynor at the back. They are going to take some sort of beating. And at this early stage, as we quickly look at the table, which is starting to get very, very interesting at this point of time, remembering 5 rounds to go, and it is Ponsonby. And they haven't got the toughest run home, to be fair. They do have an away game against Waitemata, which is on the 22nd of this month. That'll be a tough gig for them. Of course, we spoke about Pakuranga's run home, Eden University. Gee, I tell you what, even at this early stage, I'm probably never going to be let back into the Waitemata club rooms, but I think maybe Ponsonby and University may be the teams at this stage. But don't discount Eden. The Costa brothers starting to come back into this team as well. And I don't think you could probably write College Rifles or Grammar Tech off, but it'll be sort of interesting to see if some super rugby players get released. Don't forget Isi Tuanga Fasi and Andrew Makilo are both affiliated to that club, and they played 2 or 3 weeks ago when they actually beat Ponsonby. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But there's a lot to happen. I know Philo Teatea and Alama Iramea and Craig McGrath. I think, boy, you might correct me on this, there could be some Auckland players pulled out in the last few rounds of the Gallagher Shield.
Yeah, look, every chance that could happen. And as I said, last Wednesday they had a pretty decent, it was a full on contact hit out at Williams Park number 2. And all these players you mentioned, I think they're very much in the mix. Now, the interesting thing will be towards the latter part of the competition, especially the business end, some of the returning Super Rugby players, for example, Marist, who one of their key players, a superstar for the Blues, Hoskins Sututu at number 8. Now, obviously, he's had a bit of an injury with his ankle. So that might be a way he gets a bit of run on form and exposes himself back into the game. And one thing I do have to mention, Stephen, is as far as Ponsonby, the Ponies, one of the main reasons, especially they seem to be attracting some of these players, especially from Mags, is some wonderful work done by their RDO, Rocky Khan. Now, that has to be mentioned because this guy, wherever I go around Auckland Rugby, I see him, he's there. There's a few coaches on Wednesday night. I had one of the coaches, Noroa, who was a former coach at Pup Toy, now with Grammar Tech. And we were just having a bit of a conversation behind the posts. And lo and behold, who turns up? The Ponsonby RDO, Rocky Khan. So, this guy, he's on to it. And he plays a pivotal role. And in fact, a few weeks ago, I met him at the club rooms and we were having a discussion over some other rugby-related matters. And he was very confident on the Phillies winning the women's premiership. And he said, look, Bawa, I've planned this for 3 years. We're very confident that we're going to win this. And that's exactly what they did. So I think with some of the bigger clubs, you're seeing this level of planning and execution happening. They seem to be able to recruit and hang on to these quality players, and it's almost like a little academy where they churn out top quality players who go on to represent their provincial sides and beyond, i.e. in Super Rugby. So it's fantastic to see. So much kudos and all credit to Ponsonby and Rocky Khan.
I'll tell you what, he gets around. You speak about getting around. He was one of the coaches for the Ponsonby women's team last week, and then he was reserving for their premier side on the weekend. I thought he may have lost his way for the day. One player I completely forgot to mention in a beaten Marist side is New Zealand. I think he's played New Zealand 20s, Tofa Funaki, who's the halfback. Watch this kid. He is some player and mighty tough as well, but I was quite impressed how heady he was. You know, even though things weren't going right, he just basically stuck to his basics, and he's one player to watch for the future. Paul, I just see Simon in the chat room has asked about the Australian Super 8 side here for Super Rugby. Have we got time to talk about that?
We can try very quickly. Not really. Very quickly though, before we get on to that. So this weekend, obviously, we have another round of club rugby, and also is the last round of Super Rugby. We then have 3 weekends off with just the North-South game on the 29th in the middle week there before my 10 Cup happens. So that's 3 rounds where potentially, as Bo has been talking about, the Super Rugby players might be looking for a game or two. But then we have the final round of the regular season is on the first round of the Mitre 10 Cups. All those Super Rugby players will disappear off back to their provinces. Also, the top club talent will be taken away by the provinces as well. So for that final round, we're going to see some depleted sides, probably followed by then the semi-final and the final. So it's going to be interesting. Those top clubs, their depth is going to be tested, and there might be some discussions with the Mitre 10 Cup coaches around, hey, do you really need that guy on the bench, or do you think you can release him this weekend for the final of the Gallagher Shield? There's going to be some interesting discussions between the clubs and the province around that one. Maybe we'll try and get an interview with Iremire and ask him how he handles that situation. Let's see if our new if our new relationship with Auckland Rugby stretches to that. What do you think, Stephen?
You know what? All you can do is knock on the door and give it a go. And if they say no, they say no. But, you know, we are here with positive intentions.
Guys, I have to say, last week, Monica Rose has to play Ponsonby at Western Springs. So I hope they pull all the provincial players out. It's going to be a far much more even level playing field. And, I think Auckland should absolutely say no to all the rep players in that special last round.
So next round, I would say the clash of the round for next weekend is probably Marist versus College Rifles at the top end of the table. And if you're looking for a competitive game amongst the sort of lesser loved or the lower teams, then Otahuhu versus Te Papapa, I think, could be a decent game as well. Two sides that have been having a tough old season, but I think two sides that will be looking good. Unfortunately, I'm not available to get to any games this weekend, but those are the two most competitive games that jump out at me for next weekend's games. Clearly, we do not have time to talk about Super 8s this weekend this week, but I think that could be a topic for next week. Looking at the Super 8s, basically the idea of going back to a Super Rugby competition with conferences that then have the top teams heading off into finals.
Here we go again.
if you wait long enough, the bus comes back round one more time, doesn't it? Let's be honest.
Well, that's one way to make the Super Rugby unsuper again. So, sorry, I had to put that jibe in.
Thank you so much, Boa. Thank you so much, Stephen, for joining me. Folks, don't forget, we'll be here at 8 p.m. every single Monday with the Driving Maul show. Things coming up. Yes, we'll have a look at Super 8s. Obviously, we've got still got Club Rugby for a few more weeks. previewing the Mitre 10 Cup, having a chat about that North-South game as well. So lots and lots of topics. Also, the Farrer Palmer Cup kicks off in 2 weekends' time. So, lots and lots of rugby still to come for us to talk about. Please get over to our Facebook page, New Zealand Sports Radio. Give it a like and a follow. We're trying to get ourselves up to 10,000 followers. We're at 1,000. We're just over 1,000 so far. So clearly a little ways to go. So please tell all your friends, family, and even enemies, you know, get everyone liking the Facebook page.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.